if you're a person who was advising a president or a governor how to fix an economically disabled community, if you have a community that's always had a history of poverty and crime and, drug use and gang use and these communities, like what would you do? Like, how do you use this idea of like capitalism to fix something that clearly requires some charity? It requires effort, right?
First of all, we can stop making the problem worse. We can decriminalize drugs and end the war on drugs. Just like the war on poverty, it's backfired. The war on drugs is a failure, right? People, look, in a free society, people have a right to consume what they want to consume.
Of course, right? Especially
if they want to do drugs, let them do drugs, right?
Yeah.
And even if those drugs are harmful, adults can make decisions and deal with the consequences of their decisions.
Especially that the legal alternatives are just as bad.
Right. But the problem is when you have the war on drugs and you make it a crime, now you incentivize criminal activity. Because whenever something is illegal, it's much more expensive than it would be if it were legal. And now you create this huge profit opportunity for criminals to come in and fill that demand. Because people still want the drugs. They just can't buy them legally through a reputable source. The only way they can get them is, you know, illegally through a criminal.
So this is the best example of what we've created in Mexico. The best example of that in Mexico, right?
And then what you do is you increase the cost of the illegal drug. So let's say there's a heroin addict, and now heroin is illegal. And so heroin is very expensive. Well, where is this heroin addict going to get the money to buy that heroin? He goes out and steals. I mean, most of the robbery is committed by drug addicts because they need the money to buy their expensive heroin. Well, if heroin were legal, it would be much cheaper and they wouldn't have to steal.
Of course.
So,
and
you know,
the best
we create all these other crimes.
Right?
I'm not saying that people should do heroin, but they should be free to make a decision, but they shouldn't have to rob other people to support their habit.
Yeah,
and when you have heroin, when it's illegal and there's all these profits, you know, the drug guy, the pusher has an incentive to get you hooked on it. You know, I think it should, you know, maybe you should have to go get a prescription for it where the doctor can try to talk you out of it. Hey, are you sure you want to use this stuff? You know, this is going to really hurt you. I mean, do you really want to become an addict? Here's some movies. Watch what happens to you. You know, I mean, most people probably wouldn't necessarily make that decision if they were confronted with a lot of evidence that shows why it's a very disruptive way to live your life. But so we got to get rid of the war on drugs, get rid of the crime in that community. That's number one. But then as far as if you've got a lot of poor people, why are people poor, right? They're poor because they don't have the skills or they can't earn enough money. They're not productive enough to generate income, you know, above the poverty line. So if you have people who are poor, the way to make them less poor is to increase their productivity, right? One way obviously is through education when they're young, but I don't think government education is the solution because I don't think government education is educating anybody. I think government schools are run for the benefit of the bureaucracy, of the school districts, of the teachers' unions. I want free enterprise. I want vouchers or private schools to compete for educational dollars just the way, you know, the cell phone companies are competing. You know, they want me to buy their cell phone instead of somebody else's. They have to make it better and they have to make it less expensive. So let's have schools that are competing to be the best, to offer the best education at the best value. And we've got in these cities, we've got these poor kids trapped in these failed government schools. They waste their time. They learn nothing. A lot of these kids graduate. They're not even literate. I mean, they can't even do basic arithmetic.
Right, but in the current state of the world right now, those people don't have any other options. Those people
they don't have any other options because the government has taken away that option.
But what do you do for them in real time? But what do you do for them in real time? If you have a guy who's in a lower income family and he has a 7-year-old son and that kid is going to school right now, like how do you fix that right now by making it an open free market?
If we had private schools, the kid could go there.
They couldn't afford that.
Right?
What if they couldn't afford private schools?
Private schools, for people who are really poor, private schools would give out scholarships. to kids that have a lot of potential and their parents don't have the money. But it, when right, the private but sector that educates word a lot, kids, that, it's
that
cheaper.
Word, lot of potential, a lot of potential, that bothers me. Because like, what if a kid doesn't have a lot of potential? Then he doesn't get an education because he can't afford a
but
private
you know what?
School.
Not everybody. Let's say a kid doesn't have a lot of potential. A certain type of education might be a waste.
Yeah,
that
but when
kid
the kid's
might
seven,
be better off learning a trade.
Hold on,
he
hold
might
on.
Be better off
how
learning how to do something.
How would you know?
Learn a trade.
How would you know while the kid is seven? If the kid's in first grade and is seven, how do you know whether or not that kid has a lot of potential? That's crazy.
Yeah, seven is, I don't know, seven might be a little young. Well,
how
but
old
I think
before you pull the
tuition,
plug on that kid?
The tuition in first or second grade is probably going to be less than in high school. Because in order to teach a second grader, the teacher doesn't have to know as much as a teacher needs to know to teach a 10th grader. So you wouldn't have to pay a second grade teacher as much as a 10th grade teacher. See, the problem in the government is everybody gets paid the same, whether they're a lousy teacher or a good teacher, whether they're teaching a first grader or a high school. It's just all based on seniority. It's a crazy crackpot system that only the government could devise. And it's only because they have a captive audience. The people, the customers don't have a choice. And the parents aren't even involved. If the parents were actually writing a check and paying for the education, they would make sure the kids did the homework. They would make sure they were getting their money's worth. When you get it for free, I mean, you just, you know, take it for granted. So we need real education for the kids that can benefit from it. We need to get rid of the minimum wage law and all sorts of occupational licensing laws and other things that the government does that prevent people from getting jobs or starting businesses. The government is creating all sorts of barriers, artificial barriers that would not exist absent government, right? Like you have a government, let's say, you know, if you want to be a florist, like a lot of these, you know, states, they have licenses. You have to get a license to sell flowers. Why? Why can't I just buy flowers from whoever I want? I mean, what's the worst thing that can happen to me? I buy flowers from a guy that doesn't know what he's doing. I get a lousy arrangement, and so I don't go back. Does the government have to protect me from getting a bad floral arrangement? Well, look, the free market sorted out. If a guy's no good, he won't have any customers. But we make it a lot harder. There's all kinds of regulations and rules and permits. Just let people go into business. You know, I mean, poor people can start businesses if we didn't make it so expensive and so hard. And if they can flourish in the marketplace, if they can find customers, then great. If they're no good at what they do, they're not going to have any customers.
And you feel like this applies to everything? This applies to all businesses all the time?
I mean, pretty much. I mean, we don't need government, you know, having these certifications. I mean, the private sector is certainly capable.
At this point,
I mean, look,
is a consideration social media and holding people accountable, like holding businesses accountable for their actions? And like, it's a different world in terms of like the ability to like alert consumers as to what's good and what's bad. It's a different world when it comes to that kind of thing.
But people, especially now with the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, if a business isn't any good, I mean, it's going to get a bad reputation.
That's
online.
My point.
I mean, you're going to have consumer reports that go out and rate. Look at what happens. Like, look at the banks, right? The banks are completely regulated by the government, right? Everybody who opens up a bank account knows that the government is guaranteeing their deposit. That wasn't always the case. That the deposit insurance didn't start until the 1930s because of the bank failures in the Great Depression, which were minimal. I mean, fewer than 2% of the banks actually failed. There wasn't that much in the way of, and we had a lot of banks, way more banks than we have now. Now we just have these massive banks. Before the government got involved, we had a very, very competitive market. We had lots of little banks out there taking deposits, making loans to entrepreneurs to start businesses and employ people, not, you know, funding Wall Street.
Right. But do you, you remember the savings and loans collapse? Yeah. For sure you do, right?
Yeah, but those banks had government guarantees.
Right.
That was the problem.
That
so
was the
before
problem.
Before the government, right? Before the government guaranteed banks, before you would put your money in a bank, you would do a little research, just like you do research now before you buy a car. You try to figure out which is the best bank for my money, which bank is the safest, which bank, you know, isn't, you know, having problem loans, and you would consult, you know, periodicals or, you know, reviews online, you know, not online, but you would find out where the banks were good. And you would put your money in that bank. And now the banks would have to compete on reputation. on honesty, on not being aggressive. And they knew that if they made bad loans and they went bank and something happened, nobody would bail them out. The government wouldn't bail them out. Their depositors would lose money. So we had a very sound banking system back then. Today, it's very unsound. The banks are doing all sorts of reckless things with their deposits because no one gives a damn. Nobody cares what the bank does with their money once they deposit it, because the government guarantees a deposit. One bank is just as good as another. I'm just going to put it whatever bank is closest to me. You know, and so the government has polluted the entire system. They've taken away all the checks and balances of a free market. And now we have a banking system that is completely, you know, reckless. All these banks that we bailed out in 08 are going to fail again, and they're going to need even bigger bailouts. We have a very fragile a system. And now they say, well, we can't let one of these banks fail because it's so big. Why is it so big? Because the government insured their deposits and allowed them to get this big and allowed them to have access to all this cheap money from the Federal Reserve. I mean, we would have a vibrant, competitive banking system if the government got out of the way. We don't need the government to do that. The banks are much more reckless and much more corrupt now because of government than when we had free market forces reining them in.
Why aren't there more people saying what you're saying? Why is this a controversy? Why is this?
There are. I mean, I'm not the only free market guy out there. I said, if you have a Jurgensen, the libertarian candidate, she'll say some of this stuff.
No, and you know, I'm sure
she's a woman,
I could
too.
Find it.
We could actually have a woman president if we vote for her.
I'm sure I could find it if I went looking for it, Peter. But what I'm saying is, why is this not? You know, there's various discussions about how we should do things economically moving forward, right? You hear it from a bunch of different experts. I don't hear your perspective. Your perspective is very ruthless and honest. And some people would say maybe you're not considering the people that really don't even have an opportunity to get into this system and compete. They'll be held down. They'll be put into this class.
Well, I'm not being ruthless. I think I'm being fair and compassionate because I understand the damage that is being done.
I understand.
Right, in the name of these programs. But the reason that you don't see more people like me in positions of power in government is it's because it's hard for people like me to get a power position in government because we're not beholden to a special interest. You have so many special interests that are feeding off the public trough, right? There's so much corporate welfare in this country right now, which is not capitalism. And so they're not going to fund candidates that want to take away their corporate welfare. They want to fund candidates that are going to protect the status quo. And the same thing with people. Look, the government has crippled so many people that they think they need a government crutch. You know, that's an old Harry Brown quote that he ran for libertarian president. He said the government is great at crippling you and then handing you a crutch and saying, you see, without me, you couldn't walk. So many people have been crippled and they think they need that government crutch. I don't want them to be crippled. I want them to walk on their own, right? To be free. You know, I wish, you know, we had the 4th of July just recently, and, you know, we celebrate America. And you know, I talked on my old podcast, you know, about what it means to be an American. And people just don't appreciate what truly America was all about, right? It's about freedom. It's about liberty and individual opportunity. It's about being left alone from government and being able to achieve all that you can achieve without anybody standing in your way, without anybody erecting a roadblock. And we created government in America. Government didn't create us. We didn't have a king that gave us some privileges. We started off as free people, and we ceded some of our sovereignty to a government to secure and protect our rights. And that's it. And that's what made Americans rugged individuals, right? Who were not beholden or begging from government, right? They took care of themselves and they took care of their neighbors if their neighbor really needed help. It wasn't about thief. It wasn't about trying to get free stuff from the government. I mean, look at all these kids now. What do they want? Free this, free healthcare, free education, you know, all kinds of free stuff, right? Free housing, free guaranteed jobs. That's not what America was about. All of my grandparents, right? All four of my grandparents came to this country broke, barely spoke any English, right? Some of them were teenagers. They came with nothing from poor countries, and they came to America. They had no welfare, no food stamps, no minimum wage. They didn't want anything from the government. They came to America because they could be free of government. They left the big governments that existed in Europe to have American freedom, right? Because that's what it meant to be an American. And it was unique. And we created the wealthiest society in the history of the world because of the freedom that was uniquely American, right? So that's what we need to restore. That's our birthright, right? Is to be free, not to try to get the government to steal stuff from our neighbors because we think we're entitled to it.
That's a hell of a rant right there, Peter Schiff. I tell you what, that was very good. I see your perspective.
Wouldn't that make you be proud to know that we're a nation of free people?
Yeah.
Right?
Can I say that your assessment, this is what I'm seeing from you. You think that the competition and the nature of the free market would have been better off without the intervention of the government. But you understand the government was kind of put in there to regulate things because they thought that people were going to get out of hand and they wanted to make sure that things were fair. But then the government grew too big and became a problem with human beings in general. And this is my perspective.
Yeah.
Human beings
well,
in general. But hold
corrupt.
On a second.
The problem
human
is,
beings
you know,
in general have a problem when they have power over other human beings. And if that power is absolute, like the power of the government, if that power is absolute,
well,
like the power
yeah, well,
of the police,
the problem,
if
right?
that power is absolute, that's where people have a problem. Because human beings, just in general, have a problem with having absolute power over other people. And if you add
yeah,
that
well,
to government
absolute
and business,
power corrupts absolutely.
And
that is the problem.
And it
but
fucks up
when
what you
do. When you have politicians, right?
Yes.
And maybe term limits would help this, if we could have some term limits or something like that, you know, maybe... You know, you can't be in government for more than, I don't know, 5 or 10 years.
We
and then that's
it. We
need
to put these people
you know,
on mushrooms.
You know, it's not a career.
Immediately.
But these bureaucrats get in office and they want to stay there. They like it. They enjoy the perks, the privileges. So what they do is they go out and they try to raise money to get reelected. So they go to somebody and they say, give me money to help me. And it's like, well, what are you going to do for me? What's in it for me? All right, well, I'll give you this special tax break, or I'll do something to protect you, or I'll hurt. And so this is what happens. So people are bribing politicians to use their power to benefit them or to hurt their competitors. We need to disarm the bureaucrats. We have to take the power away from Washington. Washington needs to live by the Constitution, which limited federal power. Almost everything the government does today is unconstitutional, yet they do it anyway. Right?
Yes.
That it's the fact that they can wield this unconstitutional power.
I'm giving you a magic wand.
We have all these problems.
Peter Schiff, if I gave you a magic wand, what do you do with it? How do you fix things? If I say, Peter Schiff, I love what you're saying. If Trump pulls you into his office, Peter, love what you said. Phenomenal. Tremendous. And he pulls you into the Oval Office and he says, what do I do? How do I fix this mess?
Yeah. Well, again, you know, he's not going to like the truth. Because the public, you know, there's an old expression that you shoot the messenger, right? Nobody wants to be the bearer of bad news.
Maybe he's open-minded.
But it would have been better if he did it on day one. It would have been a lot more effective if he had told the truth rather than lied for 3 years and now come on, okay, I've been lying to you, now I'm gonna finally level and tell it like it is.
Do you think that he's been lying?
Solve a problem.
Do you think he's been lying, or do you think it's been a disagreement? It went the way you look at it versus the way they look at it.
No, I think he's been lying because,
really?
Look, there's no way that Trump, as a candidate, said the real unemployment rate was 30 or 40%, and the government numbers were a lie, a fraud, right? So if he actually said that, and now all of a sudden he's president, and the same exact Labor Department that was coming up with the same 5% unemployment numbers that he said was really 30 or 40, and now he says, oh, the unemployment rate is 4%, and that's magically what it is. He knows that he's lying. He was lying as a candidate or he's lying as president.
Yeah.
But these statistics don't mean anything. You know, we don't measure unemployment the way we measured it in the past, right? Because in the past, if you were unemployed and you were no longer looking for work because you were discouraged, you were still counted as being unemployed. Now, if you've given up looking for unemployment because you don't think you can get a job, you're not in the statistics. So, you know, you're not looking for a job. I mean, you're unemployed, but you're not counted. Or
right.
This happens a lot. Let's say somebody had a good job and they lose that good job. And so while they're looking for another good job, they accept a shitty part-time job, right? They're still looking for a good job, but they're making ends meet with this crappy part-time job. In the past, that guy would still be considered unemployed because he was still looking for a job, even though he took a part-time job to help make ends meet. Today, if you take a part-time job, and even if it's 1 hour a week, and you spend the rest of the week looking for a job, you're not counted as unemployed. So when you take the statistics from today and compare it to statistics from the 60s or 70s or 50s, you're comparing apples to oranges. Because back then, all those people were considered unemployed. So if, and this is what Trump meant when he was a candidate. If you actually measured unemployment today, the way it was measured back then, we'd have an unemployment rate well above 10%. I don't know where it would be. It probably wouldn't be as high as 30 or 40%, like Trump was saying as a candidate. He was probably exaggerating that. But his basic premise was right. The numbers were a lie. The same thing about the stock market. How is it that the stock market was a bubble while he was a candidate, and then all of a sudden it wasn't a bubble now that he's president? It's the same bubble. You know, he was criticizing Janet Yellen for keeping interest rates too low. Then he criticized Powell for raising them and demanded that they go to zero. In fact, he actually wants negative interest rates. He is actually saying that rates should be negative. When he was criticizing Yellen for having them at zero, now we think zero is too high.
So negative means negative you would rates. Get paid if you bought a loan? If you got a loan, you'd get paid.
That's what he wants. But you know,
where's that money coming from?
Exactly. You know, Donald Trump, I think, you know, one of the speeches that he gave, he's like, you know, I don't know how this is, you know, how this is happening, you know, who's making these loans, but we want some of that money. He's like, we should be able to borrow at negative rates. Well, that means somebody has to be losing money. Well, the only one dumb enough to lose the money is the Federal Reserve. Well, that's the American public. You know, why should the American public go deeper into debt? You know, so that we can basically steal money, which is what Trump is advocating. Look, we need higher interest rates. As I said earlier, the reason that we were so ill prepared for COVID-19, the reason that families couldn't get by without a paycheck for a few months, the reason that businesses couldn't get by without revenues is because nobody has savings. We had savings once upon a time. Before the government screwed up the economy, Americans saved their money. Right. They were self-sufficient because they weren't looking for the government to take care of them.
But
they
saved money. They saved money for their old age.
They saved money for a rainy day.
But this is 4 months. That's a long time, Mr. Schiff.
You know what? It's not.
But it is to live a normal life with a car payment and a mortgage and a Verizon bill.
Yes,
that's a lot of money.
But you know what? People shouldn't have car payments. They should own cars that they can afford.
Buy a used car. But what if I can get a 2020 Corvette right now?
The reason that's...
What if I can get a 2020 Corvette right now? Look, if I'm working at fucking UPS and I'm making 60 grand a year and they go, you're qualified. I'm like, holy shit, I'm getting a Corvette. I'm not waiting to save up $85,000.
If we had a free market in lending, if we didn't have government guarantees and we didn't have artificially low interest rates, no bank would lend you that money. And interest rates would be much higher.
I'm glad they're
going
to lend it to me, because if they lend it to me, I can get a Corvette.
Yeah, the government is subsidizing these auto loans. The government is buying these loans. The government is making it possible for people who can't afford expensive cars to buy them.
Okay, explain
that. That is not capitalism.
Explain that. How is the government subsidizing auto loans? Like, if I want to buy a 2020 Corvette and I make $60,000 a year and they hook me up for some $85,000 loan, how is the government subsizing that?
Because the government is buying those loans. What happens is, so your car company doesn't actually keep the loan. So it doesn't give a damn whether or not you actually can repay it.
Really?
So it loans you the money, right? And now it has this loan and it sells it and the government buys it, or some government guaranteed entity buys it, or the Fed now buys it.
This is assuming that you don't pay it.
But the bank doesn't lose any money.
Assuming you don't pay it, what if you do pay it? Like, if you have a loan and you pay all your payments on time, the government doesn't assume that loan, does it?
No, they don't know which loans are going to default and which are going to pay. They just buy all the loans, right? The car, like, there's a lot of this stuff. Like, you ever go
to the government buys the loans that are viable?
The mattress store is going to say, you can buy this mattress, no payments, no interest, you know, for, you know, till 2022, 2023, right?
Yeah.
You ever see these, you know, no payments, just go out and walk out. You can, nothing down, walk out the store with a $1,000 mattress.
Yeah, not specifically, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, the reason that this is possible is because the company takes that loan and sells it on the secondary market to get the money. And so it doesn't care if the person who bought the mattress can repay that loan, because it's going to sell the loan as soon as it's originated and get the money. And so the loan gets bought and packaged and structured, and it's all on you know, securitized. But all this is being propped up by artificially low interest rates and government guarantees. If we had higher interest rates, right, and a free market, consumer loans would be much more expensive than they are now, much more expensive. And so most people would not borrow money to buy stuff. They would save up their money and then they would buy stuff. They would buy less expensive stuff. And that's what we want, because we want savings going to businesses who will invest in plant and equipment to make the country more competitive, more productive, to provide services, to create goods, to provide jobs. We don't want to squander savings on consumption. But, you know, because when you borrow money to buy capital equipment, the capital equipment makes you more productive, generates more income, and that income helps you liquidate your debt. But when a consumer goes out and borrows money to buy something, they don't get an income-producing asset. Nothing services that debt. They have to service the debt at a future consumption. So now, you know, they're out of work. They can't make their car payment. They can't make their you know, the other loan payments. This type of bubble society never should have existed in the first place. And it only exists because of government. Because before government got involved, people had savings. And it's not that the American people changed. It's the American government changed. And when the government changed and created all these perverse incentives, then behavior changed. Government policy manipulated behavior, and it made us behave badly and recklessly, and it set us up for the fall that we're about to have.
I completely see your perspective. However, I look at your perspective as a guy who actually understands economics, and you're a mature man who's had a successful life. I'm looking at it like if I was a 19-year-old kid working at UPS and they told me I can get a Corvette. Okay, let's do it.
That's the problem.
It is the problem, but it's not the problem.
Look what we've done.
But it's not the problem, because that kid gets a Corvette, and his summer will be immeasurably better with that Corvette than without that Corvette. And maybe that will propel his emotions and his future and his ambition further than he ever anticipated, because he had that great summer with that Corvette that he got that he shouldn't have got the loan for. I see what you're saying. If you were my dad, I'd be like, Dad, I know you're right.
Because he thought he'd get laid more if he had a Corvette. I mean,
or because he's a man and he's American and he enjoys a Corvette. It doesn't have to be negative,
Peter. I don't blame the kid. I blame the system for making it possible for him to borrow the money, and his parents for not teaching him better. But look.
The problem is, I was that kid. I was that kid, and I would be like, fuck you, let's get that car.
Yeah, look.
It's good. I'm willing to pay the money.
Take an example. Let's talk about student loans, right? Because right now, one of the big political issues, especially among the left, right, they want to forgive the student loans, and they want to make college free, right? That's like a big thing. Like we have all these students with all this debt, and it's bad, which I agree. It's a terrible situation. But what the left doesn't want to accept is responsibility for creating the situation in the first place. It is government's fault that all these student loans exist. Without government, there would be no student loans. You know, once upon a time, people didn't borrow money go to college. Nobody borrowed money to go to college, right? My father went to college, and his parents were poor. I mean, yeah, look, my dad said they weren't sure if they were upper lower class or lower middle class, but you know, his dad was a carpenter, and so he went to college, and his parents didn't have any money to send him to college, and there were no loans. So how did my dad go? He got a summer job, and he worked his way through school, which is what most people did. You worked your way through school. So here's what happened. You know, around the 1960s, once the 18-year-olds could vote, this was a big thing. They lowered the voting age from 21 down to 28, right? So now you have all these 18-year-olds that are about to go to college. And so here's what the politicians said to all the 18-year-olds, the Democratic politicians. They said, you know, you shouldn't have to work your summers. You shouldn't have to have jobs while you're in school. You should just be able to go to school and enjoy yourself. And we're going to make it possible for you to borrow money to go to school by guaranteeing the loans, because normally the bank wouldn't lend you any money because you have no credit history, you have no assets, so you're not going to be able to get a loan.
What
but
year
we're
going to
guarantee the loan. And that way you'll be able to get the loan. Now somebody else won't get it. Some businessman won't get the loan because we're going to make them loan it to you. And now you won't have to have that summer job. And then when you graduate and have a good job, you'll just pay back the money. And it sounded like a great deal. Hey, I want to party now. I don't want to work. I'm going to have a good time. And when I get my college degree and I'm making a lot more money, well, it'll be no problem to pay back the loan. So that's how it all started. The government came in and they basically created an incentive for banks to make loans to kids with no assets and no credit history.
What year was this, Peter? What year was this?
In the 60s. I don't know the exact year.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, so then once the colleges saw that all these kids can borrow money to go to college, well, they were like, this is great. I'm just going to raise prices. So all of a sudden, tuition started to go up. I mean, for a long time, you can look back in the in history, college tuition used to be pretty stable. It didn't go up very much until the 60s, until the government really got involved. And so as soon as these colleges saw that the kids had access to all this money, they started jacking up prices. And then, of course, the universities started competing. Who's got the best gymnasium? Who's got the best, you know, housing? All kinds of other incentives. And then everything became bloated, and they kept raising their prices. And then, in order to get the votes of the students, the government kept raising the limits on how much loans they would guarantee. So it became this self-perpetuating cycle where the more money the government guaranteed that the students can borrow, the more the colleges could charge in tuition.
Oh,
and so tuition kept skyrocketing. And then as tuition goes up, it's like, oh, nobody could afford to go to college. We need more loans. So the loans themselves became the reason that people needed the loans, because the loans were why college was so expensive. And so now you needed a loan to go to college. But without the loan, tuition would have come down. You see, if there were no student loans at all, and right now the government has actually taken over. They don't just guarantee student loans. They loan directly to the students. If there were no student loans at all, if the government just said no more student loans, all of a sudden the colleges would be, oh, my God, we need to cut costs. Otherwise, we'll have no customers. Nobody can afford to go without these loans. And they would cut costs. They would start looking. They would streamline their business like everybody else. I mean, any business that could charge whatever the hell they wanted because the government could borrow the money, right? If you had a restaurant where the government was going to guarantee to pay the bill of everybody who dined there, I mean, shit, the restaurant could charge whatever it wanted. Oh, a hamburger is $1,000. Oh, the government's going to pay? Yeah, what do you care? You know, it's because people are paying with their own money that they got to keep the cost down.
And this situation's been going on for so long that it's just now how they do business.
Right. But now, see, college is now so expensive, kids think they need government to afford it. And they don't realize that the only reason it's so expensive is because of government. Ugh. That's the Harry Brown cripple you and then give you a crutch.
You're freaking me out, Peter Schiff.
College so expensive.
You're freaking me out, man. Jesus Christ.
But there's
what
an easy solution.
Okay,
get
tell me.
Get rid of the loans. Get rid of the loans. You know, let colleges lower their tuition.
Well, that
and then
might
and,
be
and let people
anyway.
Go back to what my dad did. Look, work your way through college. No big deal.
We're in this crazy situation where a lot of kids are going to have to go back to school through Zoom, even Harvard. They're talking about having these Harvard kids do school online for $40,000 a year. Wasn't that what you did?
Well, I know. Look.
Yeah. Higher than 40? It's more than 50? Jamie says $50,000 a year to do school online. That's hilarious.
Education at this point is a racket. I mean, most people will never recoup the cost of a college degree. I mean, the colleges are out there perpetuating this myth, right? That, you know, going to college is your ticket to success. That you have to go. And if you don't go, and I think I mentioned the video on your show, the podcast last time where I was down on Bourbon Street in New Orleans and I was interviewing all the people there that were working that had college degrees but were doing menial jobs, you know, the bartending, bouncers and strip clubs, pedicab drivers. They all had college degrees. Some of them had 2 or 3 degrees. And, you know, they were doing stuff that, you know, you didn't need to go to college to do. And so the colleges perpetuate this myth. Look, with the internet today and the access to online classes and self-help, you can educate yourself. You don't need to buy this overpriced certificate that says that you graduated from some college to prove that you're competent. I mean, it doesn't even prove anything now. In fact, The government did two things. They made a college degree very expensive, and then they made it practically worthless. Because before the government started subsidizing college, fewer people actually went, because only the people that could really benefit from the degree went. And so then if you had a college degree, it actually meant something in the marketplace. Now, since everybody goes to school, because it's, you know, you get the money from the government, everybody's got a college degree, they mean nothing. So now you got to get a master's degree. You got to get a PhD. You're in school till you're in your 30s. It was ridiculous that we spend so much time. It benefits the bureaucracy. It doesn't benefit the kids. You know, so this bubble, this is a gigantic bubble in higher education. It's a bubble in lower education, too. You know, I mean, some of America's wealthiest men, they didn't go to college. You know, in fact, way back when, they didn't even go to high school. A lot of these billionaires, you know, dropped out of grammar school. But today, with the internet, it should be even easier for people than it ever was. Because one of the things that the colleges had is they had the libraries, right? They had all the books. So if you wanted to get access to these books, you needed to get into these libraries. Well, it's all on the internet now. They don't have a monopoly on anything. You know, and believe me, you see how much they charge for these books? It's crazy.
It's such a good point.
These professors write these books and they force the kids to buy these books, paying $100 for a textbook.
Exactly.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It is a racket, right? And it's all supported by government. And the problem is, if you come out against this educational racket, oh, you're a bad person. You're anti-education. I'm not a bad person. I care about the kids who are getting ripped off, who are getting indoctrinated, not educated, and who are being saddled with a mountain of debt.
Can I throw
and the
something
government
at
says
you?
The solution is free education. Right?
Can I throw something
if you
at
think,
you?
If you think education is expensive now, wait till you see how much more it costs when it's free.
Do you think that the current state of colleges, when we think about colleges today, we think about social justice warriors, we think about these kids growing up in this weird future where they're going to graduate online. Do you think that the extreme liberal socialist bend that you see in colleges would be different if there was a free market? Do you think people would be more realistic in terms of if all universities were free market based? Do you think people would be more realistic in terms of their expectations for other people in the future and not look towards the government as being this piggy bank that they could dig into and pull things out?
Yeah, I think so. And I think one of the driving forces is a lot of these universities, they always want to hire professors, especially when it comes to economics or some of the political science. They want to hire people who have worked for government. And they want to see some of their professors go to government and then come back. And the only economists that will get a government job are the Keynesian economists who want to pretend that government can actually help the economy. I mean, there is no role in government for a free market economist who says, leave it alone, let the market function, right? That guy's not going to get a government job, right? The government wants to hire people that are going to justify more government spending because that's how they buy their votes. So you get these big government Keynesian economists who go between government and academia, and they go back and forth. And so it perpetuates this cycle. But there are, look, you can find some examples of universities that teach, you know, real economics, free market Austrian economics, but they're in the minority.
Yeah,
not that many of them.
Is that a problem? I mean, when we think about educating kids, I mean, is part of it's a weird way of looking at it, right? The idea that the government paying for everything, making everything more expensive, is going to make more people that are dependent upon not competing and being a part of this weird system where you think you're owed things, right?
Yeah, I mean, look at AOC, right? I mean, she was an economics major, but look, she's completely ignorant about basic economics. I mean, the thing is, she thinks she knows a lot. She doesn't know anything. A lot of times when people learn economics in a university, they end up knowing less about economics after they graduate than before they enroll. They end up, you know, they lose their common sense and they get spoon-fed a bunch of nonsense, which they end up, you know, regurgitating throughout their careers.
I hear what you're saying, but hold on a second. I think when you deal, I mean, she's 28, right? I think what she is an idealist. I think she's a kind person who has this visionary perspective of how she wants the world to play out. And when she says those things, I think she's saying those things from because she feels like she's a force of good.
I don't doubt that, although she could be, she's just a great politician.
Yes, but I think that economics are complicated, and I think most 28-year-olds don't really understand it. I think it's really complicated, and I think we get idealistic in or ideologically based in, like, you're a left wing, you think this way, you're right wing, you think that way, and we get very rigid in how we look at things. But if you want to look at what you're saying in terms of competition creates the best solution for everybody, because the most effective and viable method is the one that rises to the top, and that's the one that people support with their money if they have total freedom. But if you have the government that steps in and dictates that you have to go this way or that way, or it has to cost this much or that much, then the government itself becomes a business. And the problem is it needs to verify or justify its own existence by creating more and more regulations, more and more problems, more and more impediments. Yeah. To freedom of competition.
Yeah, every time the government writes a regulation or passes a law, we're less free, because those regulations and those laws are limiting our freedom because they're restricting our choices.
Right, and but to bring the two of us together, to bring everybody together, don't you think that, like, maybe there's an opportunity where people can recognize, like, that doesn't mean you're a bad person. You're just looking at the actual game. And there's a lot of bullshit going on where people are pretending what's happening is different than what it is because they want to feel better about the results. But the reality, I think
most of the people on the left are not bad people. They're motivated by good intentions.
Kindness.
They just don't understand compassion. The bad outcome.
Yes.
But, you know, and this is the interesting thing, because a lot of people of my persuasion, right, we look at the left and we don't think they're bad people. We just think they're misinformed.
You're talking about Puerto Rican Jews?
But the people on the left actually think people like me are bad and evil because we don't agree with their programs. We must be mean people. We must be heartless people because we're against all the good that they want to do.
Okay, but stop. You know that that's a reductionist argument.
The rational thought, because they don't have those thoughts.
Right, but you know that's a reductionist argument that doesn't really make any sense. But you'll entertain it, even though you know it doesn't make any sense. Like, the people that are really paying attention know that doesn't make any sense. It's not that you're a heartless person. You're not heartless at all. You're explaining what is actually going on in terms of, like, government subsidizing education. Yeah. You're talking about competition in terms of the free market. None of what you're saying, just from me to you, is in any way conveying a sense that you're a heartless person. But that is the narrative when people don't agree with what you're saying, because they have in their head an ideologically based alternative to what you're saying.
Yeah, and look, I watched the interview that you did with Jon Stewart, right? And, you know, and Jon said a lot of things that I agree with, like a lot of the problems on Wall Street and the bailouts, all that's true. But again, what he didn't understand was that's not capitalism. That's wrong. That was an example of socialism that never should have happened. But then when you guys were talking about it and you said, yes, I mean, you'd be willing to pay more taxes if it would make the problems better.
Yes.
The problem is paying more taxes is going to make the problems worse. We're paying a lot of taxes and the government is spending even more money. And that spending is the taxation. Government has never spent this much money, and the problems have never been bigger.
But hold on a second.
If spending money solves problems, we would have solved them a long time ago.
Yes, I agree with you. But can I stop you for a second? When I'm saying that I would pay more money if I thought it would fix it in taxes, I'm not thinking of the government as its current entity that ruins everything. I'm thinking of, like, if I could give more of my income to taxes and it would actually make a solution, I would be willing to do it. I'm not saying that it would work that way. I don't know if it would work that way. I don't understand economics at all, and I don't understand the government.
But why
at
not,
all.
Joe?
But when I say,
why not cut out the middleman, right? Because you think, hey, if I can give my money to government and maybe they do good with it. There's no example of government doing good with money because it's not their money. They don't give a damn.
I don't disagree with you.
What's stopping you, Joe Rogan, you, from giving more money directly to causes that you think are worthwhile? You don't need the middleman. You don't have to cut in the government on your charitable giving. You can do it yourself.
That's true.
One of the best things that you can do for people is employ them, provide them with a job, grow your business. So, bro, if the government taxes your money,
hold on,
you can't invest in growing
Peter
your business.
Schiff, I have a fucking manageable business with a skeleton crew, and you're not going to fuck this up for me, all right? I'm not making more business. Settle down, buddy.
But you can also, Joe, you can invest. Let's say a friend of yours came to you, right? Okay. A good friend of yours, and said, hey, Joe, I got a great idea to start this business. And he had a business plan, and here's what I'm going to do.
I say, good luck, bitch. Like,
hey, I'll invest in your business. And then all of a sudden, the government takes that money in taxes. Oh, I can't afford to make that investment in your business because the government just took the money in taxes. So now you can't start that business.
I completely understand what you're saying. When I was saying it, and I don't disagree with you, when I was saying it, I was saying, if I could give more money, and that money, if I didn't have to think about like where to put it, if I knew that that money was going to be managed by ethical, knowledgeable wizards who know how to take care of the world's problems, that they just get 5% more taxes from people that are doing well, I'd be willing to do it. It wasn't saying that I think it's a good idea to give more money to these people that we elect that we don't even know. I mean, I don't know Gavin Newsom. I make fun of him all the time. I bet he's a nice guy. I don't know Mayor Garcetti. I bet he's a nice guy, too. It's a fucking impossible job.
Yeah, look,
I don't want that job.
That benevolent government doesn't exist on this planet, right? So, you know, there's no point saying
socialism.
I would be willing to give money to government if they would use it wisely.
Right. It's like, but it's like effective socialism.
I'd be willing to give my 10-year-old, more money if I thought he would spend it wisely. I mean, they're not going to do that. And, you know, to the extent that you want government to have money, it should be local government, the closer to the actual source. So you should, if you want government to have more money, it should be your local government, your city, your county. Don't send it to Washington, D.C. You're in California. That's 3,000 miles away. What the hell are they going to do about your community? They don't know what's going on. They're so far removed from the money they're spending. They can't. It makes no sense to do this. This
is such a really good
waste.
Point.
Of money and such a waste of resources.
That's a good point. And that's something that Hunter S. Thompson had said in the 70s when he's running for sheriff in Aspen. He said, you can affect local community, but the people in Washington, they really don't affect your day-to-day existence. It's a myth.
Yeah. Look, the more money that you send to Washington, the less money you can send to your local government. I mean, initially, the federal government didn't have any taxes. And so the taxes were local.
Okay, Peter Schiff.
But now the government takes everything, and now all the towns have to beg to get the money back, and now the government has all kinds of strings. The federal government says, if you don't do this and you don't do that, we're not going to give you highway funds. We're not going to give you student funds. So now the government is taking control. The federal government is taking control of all the states. Let's take the power away from the federal government and put it back in the states where it belongs. You don't let the federal government take all that money out of the local economy, and now you free up more resources for local governments that would do a much better job with the money than Washington, D.C.
So essentially, it's like we need some sort of rules to get along, but you're saying that we should agree upon those rules in the free market and not have some government entity, some group of people that's no different than our own selves controlling us and telling us what we can and can't do because it's written on paper somewhere, because somewhere in the halls of justice people agree that you should be able to control people in a certain fashion and acquire some percentage of their income, and you'd use that money at your own discretion with no receipts whatsoever. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and here's an important point, though, that I really want to get across in this podcast. Because, we are headed, as I said, for a massive economic crisis. I mean, what we've seen so far is nothing, right? What happened in 08, what's happened since COVID, this is a dress rehearsal for a much bigger show that's coming. That's going to be much worse. It's going to, inflict a lot more pain. And I'm not happy that this is going to happen. If I could stop it, I would. I'm just like watching this, train wreck in slow motion, and I can't do anything about it. But I know what's going to happen. It's going to be blamed on capitalism. Right. The politicians are going to say, you see what happens when you don't have enough government, when you don't have enough regulation, when you have too much greed. Right. And the public is going to buy this nonsense just the way they bought it about the financial crisis. The reason that I was warning people for years about the housing bubble and the financial crisis, the reason I was able to write a book and lay it out exactly the way it happened, the reason I was doing all these lectures around the country warning people about the disaster that the Federal Reserve was creating was because I understood the economics. I understood the mistakes that Greenspan was making, and I knew the consequences that were in store for us. Well, the mistakes that have been made by Bernanke, by Yellen, by Powell, dwarf the ones that were made by Greenspan. It's the same mistakes, just on a much bigger scale. The country is in far worse shape now than it ever was at any point in the past, you know, structurally and with all the debt. And this crisis is going to be a currency crisis where the dollar crashes. We're going to have massive inflation in a weak economy. They called it stagflation when it happened in the 1970s. The Keynesians didn't know what to do with it because it violated all their rules of economics because they don't understand economics. Well, this is going to be much worse. And I want to make sure that people understand where to put the blame. It's not capitalism. It's not freedom. It's government. And government is going to try to sell us on another bill of goods, that the solution is to give government even more power, to give the Federal Reserve even more power, when the only solution is to take away the power that they have. But I also want to make sure, and this is what I'm doing personally. I do two things, right? I try to educate people so that they understand the economy and so they know who to blame for the problems. But I'm also trying to make sure to spare as many people as I can from suffering the financial consequences, right? I said earlier in the podcast that the government is financing these expenditures through inflation. Inflation is a tax, right? The government is taking your purchasing power. We don't feel it that much now because foreigners are subsidizing us with holding our dollars in treasuries and other instruments. But when the dollar crashes and prices go through the roof, people are going to get wiped out by this inflation tax. A lot of people who are retired are going to see their life savings just evaporate. I mean, they'll still have their money. They just won't be able to buy anything with it. And what I'm afraid, too, is that we're going to get price controls, because when the government starts to see prices really going up and the public complains, just like Richard Nixon did, and although inflation was only 4% when Tricky Dick put on wage and price controls. But I mean, it's going to be way higher than that this time. But they're going to create shortages. They're going to create black markets. There's going to be blackouts, food shortages. Ought there be riots? You think the riots are bad now? Wait till you see how much worse they're going to get. You know, right now people are getting, you know, placated by all these checks that the government is sending out. But when the checks bounce because they don't buy anything, that's when you're really going to see the civil unrest. But I want to make sure that people do something, right? That's what I'm doing with my clients, that they get out of their dollars to escape this inflation tax. I want as many Americans as possible not to go broke like you. I want to make sure that you just signed a big check with Spotify. You know, you should have had a gold clause in that contract because, you know, it's over 10 years. 5 years from now, you're not going to get anywhere near the money you think you're going to get because that inflation is going to destroy its value. Uh-oh. Right? So you got to do something. A lot of people.
Let me hold on a second. Hold on a second. Hmm? Stop. What would you have done differently, and what can we do now? Like, what would you have done differently if you and Trump were homies and he said, hey, Peter Schiff, I'm thinking about shutting this thing down. What do you think I should do? What would you have done differently that would have somehow or another preserved at least a modicum of our economy? And what would you do? What would you advise they do going forward? What would you have done differently?
I don't want to preserve the economy we had.
Right, because it was a bubble. What would you have done?
And so trying to preserve that is a mistake.
Right, but what would you have done? First thing, you know this shit's coming.
We need higher interest rates from the Federal Reserve, not lower interest rates. We don't need any more money printing, and we need the government to cut spending.
Okay, but right? A disease is coming.
What we've done.
A disease is coming, Peter Schiff. We got to shut down the world, or we're going to kill people. What do we do differently than what we did?
Well, again, first of all, I think we would have handled our response to the disease better if we actually realized the cost of what we were doing. I think that we've acted so cavalierly because we believe we're getting all this government for free. We believe it's okay for people to stay at home and watch Netflix and receive government checks. We don't understand the greater damage. See, what we're doing now, this monetary policy, this fiscal policy, is going to impose far more harm on average Americans than the coronavirus ever could have. So we have to get that our cure is so much worse than the disease ever could have been. We got to understand that concept, and we got to understand the concept that we had a bubble. We need to let it deflate. That is the best thing you can do with a bubble. Don't try to blow more air into it.
Okay. Hold on. Let me take this from this alternative perspective. The problem with what you're saying is that people, if the government didn't step in and ensure that some money went out so people could provide basic needs and necessities, people were going to die because they were going to have to go to work.
They were going to die.
Well, that's what we were thinking. But Peter, that's what we thought in March. We did think that in March.
How were they going to look?
Did you not think we were going to die in March? Did you not think we were going to die? Do you not think a certain percentage of people you knew were going to die?
Well, there's always a certain percentage of people who get the flu who die.
Right.
But it was a little more concerning than the flu. The people who were 80 years old or higher who were dying from all sorts of things. That's when we start dying. I mean, not many of us live much further than 80. That's about life expectancy.
That's not necessarily true, though. I know I have a good friend that almost died. My friend Michael Yo, who's a comedian, who's been on this podcast, who's very healthy. He almost died from it.
But how does the Federal Reserve printing money save somebody's life?
I'm not saying it does. What I'm saying is when it happened,
it just creates a new problem.
What I'm saying is when the pandemic occurred, we were all scared. So if you're sitting here saying they should have done this, in a way, at least, it's an unfair version of Monday night quarterbacking or Monday morning quarterbacking because we didn't really know what this disease was. In March, I was fucking scared of it. I was really nervous.
That's not what I'm trying to do. My point, Joe, is that our economy was such a disaster before COVID.
I understand that.
That we were vulnerable to anything that came out of left field, any problem. See, this is another financial crisis. It's like the 08 financial crisis. Why is this a financial crisis? In 2008, the reason it was a financial crisis was because real estate prices went down. Because they were a bubble created by the Federal Reserve, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, moral hazard. I mean, I wrote a book. I lectured for years and years about the housing bubble and how the government nurtured it, right? So because we had this housing bubble, once real estate prices went down, people who borrowed money didn't pay back their loans. They no longer had any incentive to make the payments because their house was worth less than their mortgage. They just mailed in the keys. They called it jingle mail, right? So now the banks were in trouble because the loans went bad. And now Wall Street had packaged up these loans into pools of subprime securities. I made some money shorting those back in the day, and some other people did too, because we recognized what was going to happen. But the crisis started when people defaulted on their loans. Well, what's happening now? Way more people can't pay their loans than in 2008. It's not just people with mortgages that can't pay. Businesses can't pay their rent, right? Companies can't repay their debt. We have a corporate debt bubble in addition to a consumer debt bubble. We have record credit card debt, record auto loan debt, record student loan debt, record corporate debt, record government debt. Everybody is loaded up with debt, and now nobody can pay. It's all a financial crisis. But again, the only reason that this economy is so screwed up is because government policy screwed it up. And the solution isn't to increase that policy. Just like I said earlier, if you have a drug addict, the solution isn't more drugs, bigger doses of drugs to try to keep the guy high, because eventually you can kill him. You could overdose. And that's where we are now. The amount of monetary stimulus that the Fed has now crammed into this economy is a monetary overdose.
Can I talk?
They are going to kill the economy.
Peter, I know. I see where you're coming from when it comes to the 2008 loan crisis. That makes a lot of sense. But the difference between this and that is these people didn't make any poor decisions. They're just thrust into this crazy world where there's a disease that forces businesses to shut down. But this is my perception. As a community of people, shouldn't there be a way, at least the government does its best at organizing people to donate money that could go and help people that are in this situation? Don't you think people would organize themselves?
There would be private charities. Nobody would starve. And nobody was starving in America. Before all these government anti-poverty programs, when poverty was on the decline, nobody was starving.
Right, but hold on a second with starving. People right now are in the they're in a real peril. They're in They could lose their house. They could lose their car. They could lose their education. There's a lot of weird shit going on right now that's through no fault of their own because businesses are shut down. This is why I disagree that it's the same sort of situation that happened in 2008. For sure, what you're saying makes sense in terms of economics, about the foundation of our economic country, the way the economy was fucked up already. That makes sense. But
the same thing happened in the Great Depression.
COVID happened.
People, through no fault of their own, people were unemployed, but the government didn't come in and bail them out. I mean, during the Depression, Roosevelt initially got some relief. That was the first time we had welfare. They called it relief.
Right.
It wasn't a lot of money. Right. There were no bailouts for businesses, really, you know, cash bailouts like we have now. Look, if the government stayed out of this, let the free market, let landlords and tenants work it out among themselves. I mean, the landlords know they can't evict because there's no other tenants. You know, let employers and employees, let everything will work out in a free market. Right. If you let people voluntarily interact, people aren't going to be kicked out on the street. People aren't going to be left hungry. The market is going to be able to solve the problems. The government comes in and creates a whole new set of problems that are far worse, right? Because the government doesn't have anything. All it does is print money now. It doesn't create anything, right? It just prints. It just creates money out of thin air that doesn't have any real value.
I understand what you're saying.
In the process of doing that, they destroy the value of the money that exists, and they screw up the economy immeasurably. They make the economy less productive and less efficient. And so that means people are going to be poorer. Government makes people poor. It's free market capitalism that makes them wealthier.
I understand what you're saying, but in this situation, isn't this really unique where no one can work? Where we're in a situation where for months and months we have to stay locked down. A lot of businesses are not essential or labeled essential. Whoever gets to decide that, I mean, shouldn't that be something we vote on? What's essential and not essential? I mean, that seems a little crazy.
Well, yeah, I do think that all that government telling people what businesses can and cannot open. Look, I disagree with a lot of these policies. And again, I believe that governments would have acted more responsibly if they didn't think they could put the cost on the Federal Reserve, which is what everybody is doing. I think if each state had to shoulder the burden of its own policies, they would have a more rational approach to COVID-19.
Because everybody
thought it was free, and we had this huge moral hazard.
Yeah, this is what I asked you in the beginning.
And now again, we created this situation. Look, you got all these school teachers. They don't want to go back to work. They want to get paid not to work. We have now created a situation where so many people, I'm not going to go to work. Oh, I don't want to risk getting COVID. Just send my paycheck to my house.
Why'd you single out school teachers?
I mean, this is ridiculous.
Why'd you single out school teachers? Why'd you say school teachers?
Well, because I was just, you know, the unions are, you know, they're out there saying, but it's not just school teachers, right? There's a lot of people who want to say, I don't want to work because I don't want to get COVID. And so, you know, but meanwhile, people take a lot of risk. I mean, maybe someone who doesn't want to go get COVID, they go out mountain biking, you know, or they go skydiving or who knows what, or they smoke cigarettes. You know, they do all sorts of things that risk their health. But now all of a sudden, no, I'm not going to, I don't even want to go if I have to wear a mask. I just want to stay home because we're giving people an easy way out of going to a job that they'd rather not go to. I mean, I don't blame people for not liking their jobs. You know, I don't blame people for enjoying leisure. But, you know, we can't set this situation up. But what makes everybody think it's possible is because we don't think there's a cost to all this printing money. It's all this like modern monetary theory nonsense that we can just print money. We can have whatever we want as long as the Federal Reserve prints the money to pay for it.
I see what you're saying.
This is a disastrous way of thinking.
I see exactly what you're saying. I think it's interesting because I don't think it's either or. I think there's definitely a lot of people that are going to just never go back to work again if they get that money, if they get free money from the government.
But hold on a second, Peter.
I also think it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if we could figure out a way to get food to people and make sure they don't starve to death. I see like both extremes.
The free market will do that. You know how cheap food is now thanks to the free market? The government has screwed up agriculture.
But here's
the Department of Agriculture.
We never really got to my question.
We pay farmers not to farm.
Yes.
We pay farmers not to grow food to diminish the supply of food.
That's a corn thing, right?
You realize that we do that?
I've heard about that with corn subsidies.
The goal of the Department of Agriculture is to keep food prices high. That is the stated goal, right? What they want to do is restrict farming so that less stuff is farmed so that food prices are higher. That is what the government is actively doing. They are pursuing a policy to make food more expensive than it otherwise would be.
But what
to
is
make
their,
it less
but,
abundant?
But hold on a second.
What kind of asinine policy is that?
What's their when they describe it? How do they describe about when they state their business model? How do they say it? That's your version of it. What do they
trying,
say?
They're saying that they want to protect the farmers.
They want to keep farmers
from competition
open.
Or because they could have bad weather or bad
right.
crops or
right.
they just want to make they want to keep
okay.
up do you farm
know,
income.
Do you know where these subsidies
I mean,
came
nonsense.
From? Do you know where these subsidies came from?
This, again, they start let's start with the New Deal.
Right, but it came from World War II when they needed food, when they needed to supply the troops, they needed money for food. There's a lot of what happened with farm subsidies. They recognize that we could get into a situation where we don't have enough food, especially if farmers go under. So they decided to subsidize farms. I'm not an expert on this by any stretch of the imagination, but I read a piece on it once, and the way they were describing it was like people like to look at subsidizing farms as being this like frivolous thing or thing that doesn't really benefit the people. But the idea came about because they were worried about one day having a food shortage, and this happened post-World War II. Are you aware of
the
origins
of that? That's the nonsense,
there?
Right, that the government wants you to believe. Look, you could go back, you know, we subsidize tobacco, right? The government gives subsidies to tobacco farmers. And actually, if you go back when they, you know, they talked about it initially, because they say, hey, why are we subsidizing tobacco farmers? Because, you know, why do we want to make it easier for people to smoke? And they actually agreed that the subsidies are restricting the production of tobacco and making tobacco more expensive. And so by subsidizing tobacco farmers, we'll actually have fewer smokers because we're making the cost of tobacco higher. That's
yeah,
what government
but that's
does.
Tobacco,
government comes in and makes the price of food higher. That's
right.
their goal.
That's
to make food more expensive.
That, I mean, that's an industry that kills people.
How heartless is that?
That's tobacco. You're talking about
but
an industry that knows from the jump.
All agriculture subsidy.
But tobacco is different, man. They know they're killing people.
No, this is the same.
Okay.
No, I'm saying
I understand financially.
We shouldn't subsidize tobacco farmers. But they said we're doing it because it makes tobacco more expensive.
Okay.
Well, it's the same subsidy for wheat farmers.
Right, but it wasn't originated.
The goal is to make a price higher.
Yes, but that's not, that wasn't the initial goal. The initial goal,
well, of course,
it became
they never say that. They're never honest. The government is never honest about what it's doing.
But don't you think post-World
War II? It's trying to get the votes of the farmers. The farmers want higher prices.
I understand. But don't you think that post-World War II, they were seriously concerned about having food supplies so they could feed soldiers and feed people in this country if the shit hit the fan? You think it was really all about economics?
We had so much food. You know, Joe, one of the things they did
really?
During the Great Depression was they destroyed food.
So
that
this
was
is
like
just,
one of the big programs of FDR.
What I'm saying is just propaganda.
Because we had too much of it.
So it's just propaganda. What I'm saying is just,
yes.
I got a hold, they hit me. They hit me with their propaganda. I'm reciting it.
Yeah, it's all, look, there, people always want something from government. Look, people who are selling a product want high prices,
right?
Consumers, we want low prices. But if you're selling something, you want high prices. But competition brings prices down. So what you do is you enlist government to help you. And government helps you get higher prices than you can get in a free market. Right? So government, private companies have an incentive to get the support of politicians so they can make more money than they could in a free market. The problem is we need to take away the power of the government to grant those special privileges to any business. There should be no subsidies for businesses. You know, corporate welfare does as much damage, maybe more, than welfare for individuals, right? All of this has to go, and we need a vibrant free market economy. And hopefully, when this whole thing collapses, and it's going to collapse, and we have hyperinflation or very high inflation, and we wipe out the savings of the vast majority of Americans, and we go through a really, really, you know, hard, deep economic time period. If we could do a reboot, if we can resist the temptation to fully embrace socialism and go all in on the ideology that destroyed us, if we can go back to free market capitalism, we have a bright future. I mean, you know, with the tools that we have today, if we can have 19th century capitalism with 21st century technology, I mean, it's amazing what we can achieve. You know, I watched your interview with Andrew Yang, you know, who's afraid of technology destroying jobs. Look, technology is going to liberate labor. It's going to make us richer. People have been advancing Andy Yang's analogy probably ever since the wheel was discovered. There's always some politician that says, oh, this new technological advancement is going to put somebody out of work. Yes, we want to save labor. We want to free up labor to do something else because labor is scarce. And if we can free it up from a mundane activity, that labor can do something else. And now we can have more. Right? We can have more stuff. We can have a higher standard of living. So all that is possible. But I want to make sure that there are people who don't go broke. That's why I'm telling people, you know, get out of your dollars, you know, buying gold. I've been telling people on your podcast, you know, gold is now over $1,800 an ounce. I think when I started coming on, you know, it was closer to 1,000. But I think it's going to 5,000, 10,000, 20,000. I mean, and it's not really gold going up. Dollar going down. The dollar is going to lose its value.
This is where people are at today. One of the concerns with the way our country is going is there's a lot of people that are just they're leaning towards what they feel is the right way to go, where all their peers agree is the right way to go, and it's going to lead to a better future. But a lot of the people making these decisions don't have a lot of life experience. So you got a tremendous amount of momentum for 18, 19, 20-year-old people. And when they hear something like free market capitalism is going to fix the world, one of the things that bothers them the most is that they associate free market capitalism with greed and money over people. And this is what the problem is, the way they promoted themselves.
When
someone says, I'm a libertarian, there's a lot of people that automatically say,
are doing a better job of selling their ideology than the capitalists. And capitalism is getting blamed for a lot of the problems that socialism is creating. But you know, when people are saying, again, it's somebody is greedy, we're all greedy in the sense that we all want the best for ourselves and our families, right? We all want to go out and make money so that we can have a better life and buy more things that we feel will make us happy, right?
Yes.
And so, but what people have to understand is capitalism channels that greed in a very positive way. Because in order for somebody to enrich themselves in a free market, they need the voluntary cooperation of other people. They need to be able to provide goods and services that are better, lower cost, higher quality than somebody else. And they have to provide employment opportunities. They have to provide people with better jobs than somebody else. Because they usually you can't have a company unless you can get people to work for you.
Peter,
so
I'm agreeing.
You have to have good jobs and good products.
Peter, I agree with everything you're saying.
And so it benefits the customer and the worker.
I agree with everything you're saying. But what I'm saying is that in the general public's view, when you say free market capitalism, they equate mean. When you say socialism, they equate kind. This is the problem. There's a problem not even nearly as much as philosophy or fact or history of, like when you're talking about the free market, but rather the way the public perceives it. When they think of socialism, they think is good and healthy and warm and loving and inclusive, and they think that's the future. Like, I don't know socialism has done to market themselves so well.
Just legalized theft.
Whatever socialism has done to market itself.
There's nothing benevolent or caring about theft.
Yes.
Right. I don't care if the thief is well-intentioned. Right. It's immoral. Capitalism is moral. It's honest. And it's what lifts people out of poverty. You know, the world is littered with examples of socialists that have impoverished people. And, you know, there's various forms of socialism. There's communism. There's fascism. Right. Millions and millions of people have been slaughtered in the name of this failed ideology. And every country that has embraced it, it has impoverished everybody. Right? They don't share the wealth. They destroy the wealth. They make everybody equal by impoverishing everybody.
But Peter,
and then
why
what
is it so attractive?
The rich people under socialism are the people with political connections.
Well, why is it so attractive then? Why is it so attractive? Why do so many kids, why are so many young, progressive, ideologically left-wing kids attracted to the idea of socialism? Why is it so attractive is capitalism so negative to them?
Why do so many five-year-olds believe in Santa Claus? You know, I mean,
because you lied.
It's a
to
nice
them.
Idea. Some guy comes in down the chimney and gives you a bunch of presents.
Right, right? But lie to them when you tell them about Santa Claus. That's a willful lie.
But you don't have to tell them; they figure it out. I mean,
no,
eventually, the kid is old enough. So this is what happens with socialism,
bro. You got to lie about Santa Claus.
When you're a young guy or a young woman, and you don't have any real life experience, you haven't worked, you haven't had a business, you haven't been out in the real world, you live with your parents, you go to school, and socialism sounds good. I mean, in theory, it sounds great, but you don't have any real life experience. By the time you're older, and you've been in the real world and you've paid taxes and you've seen the consequences, you start to understand more.
Yes.
And then you give up your childish beliefs. The problem with a lot of these older socialists like Sanders, it's like a kid that never grows up. It's like somebody who's 70 and still believes in Santa Claus. Like they never figured it out. Right. So that's Sanders never figured out that there's no Santa Claus. He thinks there's Santa Claus and it's the U.S. government. And we can get all this stuff for free if, you know, if we're just nice.
I would love to lock you two together. I would love to lock you two together in a room and film it for like 6 hours. Just have you.
I would debate. I would debate any big socialist that you could get on your show.
I'm sure you would.
I'd love to do it.
Listen, Peter, we just banged through 3 hours, if you can believe it or not.
No, we could keep going for another three because there's so much stuff that we could actually talk about.
No, I think, but I just want to say this before we wrap up. I think you provide some very honest and brave insight. You buck the trend of sugarcoating things, and the way you describe your version of free market capitalism is very honest, and it doesn't seem mean. And I think this is what's important about it. Like, there's a lot of people that think that they have this thought in their head. This was trying to get across, that if you say capitalism, if you say someone who's ambitious, you equate that and success to mean. And this is a part of the problem with the marketing strategy that's been employed by capitalism. And it's not a real strategy, but versus socialism.
Yeah.
Socialism has even though it has what you were saying before, it has all these debts connected to it and no success. It's got this really, like maybe if we just try it one more time, this is really attractive. It's something that's inside of people that are compassionate. They're like, maybe we can try it one more time and get it right.
Yeah, and it's not my version of capitalism. That's capitalism. What we have now is not capitalism.
But I'm saying the way you describe it.
In people who are mean, right, actual mean people, don't succeed in business. They piss off their customers. They piss off their workers. They lose their customers. Their employees quit, and they get better jobs from people who treat them fairly.
Right.
Customers go where they get a good deal, right? And so I want to put my faith in individuals and the free market, not a bunch of bureaucrats, right? These guys are out for themselves. Don't think they're there to be public servants. They're there to enrich themselves. That's who you have to be suspicious of. That's where greed is damaging. When you take greed and combine it with political power, that's when it's a problem. In a free market, it just helps me. It's government that hurts me. But look, I want to point out, I talk about this. I got my own podcast, not nearly as popular as yours. But you know, I would certainly welcome the people that listen to Rogan to go and listen to the Peter Schiff Show. I do a couple of podcasts. You can listen to them on Schiff Radio. You can listen to them on YouTube.
Tell people your Instagram too. You have an Instagram? Instagram? What's your Instagram?
Yeah, you know, I just started Instagram. Crazy enough, my wife was like, "You got to go on Instagram."
How many people do you have on it right now?
Well, I only have a few thousand followers.
Let's see what we can do.
I've got about 250,000 Twitter followers. You know, they still haven't verified my account.
That's outrageous.
Whatever it is, I can't get verified.
I'll tell you exactly
what it is. Followers.
I'll tell you exactly what it is. It was the Occupy Wall Street videos. That's what it was. They fucked you over. Those Occupy Wall Street videos.
But you can watch that on my YouTube channel. I've got about 350,000 subscribers on my YouTube channel. I'm talking mostly economics. I do a little politics. I touch on some of the social issues. I talk a lot about the markets. And again, I think it's important. I mean, I have an asset management business. I'm trying to get people to get out of U.S. stocks that I think are overpriced, out of U.S. bonds. I think we're headed for a major crash. And unlike the crash we had in 2008 and 2000, the Fed's not going to be able to bail you out with a printing press. It's not going to be the third time's the charm. It's going to be three strikes, you're out. So you got to get your money out of U.S. markets. I'm investing money around the world in countries that I think are relatively free. They have less regulation, lower taxes, more economic freedom. Their markets are not overpriced. Their currencies are going to retain their value. We're buying gold. We're buying gold stocks. I'm doing everything I can to preserve as much wealth as I can for Americans.
Yes.
So
did
that
you drink Black Rifle
fan,
coffee
we
before
can
you
bring
did
that
this?
Money back and help to rebuild this country.
You're an animal. Listen, how many people do you have on Instagram? I want to see how many we can bump you up to. What do you have right now?
Well, as I said, I just started it this week.
But what is it?
So
what's the number?
And I'm going to start putting up. It's my Peter Schiff is my handle.
But I want to know how many you have because I want to. How many
3,
we can get you.
Look at it. I just
3,000. Jamie, what does he have?
Yeah, 35. Yeah.
Jamie doesn't know. He's going to find out momentarily. Want to see if we can
see if you can get my Twitter up to 1 million or my YouTube channel. I mean, you know.
Listen, we will get people will go everywhere, Peter Schiff. Listen, I appreciate you. I appreciate your honesty and your perspective, and it's always a good time talking to you. And I appreciate sharing your information with us, because from a real experience perspective of someone who really understands what you're talking about, I really appreciate it.
One thing I want to mention about that Occupy Wall Street. I did that Occupy Wall Street, and I got 2.5 million views on it now on my channel. And it had millions and millions of views before I posted it. I posted it a couple of years ago, right before I went on your show, so I can point people to it. But even though I did that, like in 2009, every single day, I don't think I miss a day, I get an email from somebody, some young person from somewhere in the world. It's, you know, all over the world, to say that that video, that 2-hour video of me addressing the occupiers, that is what changed them and put them on the direction of going from socialist to free market. That after they heard me talk, they did some more research, they educated, and they did a complete 180. And they went from being total government socialist to being complete free market capitalist because they saw that video. And that's why I went down to Zuccotti Park. I didn't think that I would necessarily change the minds of the occupiers, but I knew that the video that Reason was doing would change more people's minds. So the more people who see that, you know, who look at that interaction and share it with your friends and people who, you know, who look at me, listen to my podcast or look at my tweets and share them. And we got to spread the truth, because there's so many people spreading lies. There's only me and a few other people spreading the truth. So we need help. We need the public to help disseminate the information that I'm putting out there. Yes. And I don't charge anybody for this information, right? Everything is, I don't make any money off the podcast. I'm trying to get it out there. Yes, sometimes I get clients. People become clients of mine, then I make some money. But the vast majority of the people who are listening to my content, they don't have enough money to fund an account with me. But I'm influencing them in the way they think, and I'm helping them influence others.
Right,
So they tune out all the nonsense.
Thank you, Peter Schiff. Thank you, Peter Schiff.
Thanks, Joe. All right.
Stay hard.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, buddy.